Blog Talk Radio.
Our roots began in Africa, where we enjoyed self-determination and freedom, which were rooted in our sovereignty. Peace, family. Welcome to Dare to Win, the Us Lifting Us weekly radio program that airs every Thursday evening from 9 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. Dare to Win is the place where we have sobering conversations about the economic plight of Black people and the imperative that we build the global economic machinery that will free us and once again put us on the path of making history. We at Us Lifting Us have developed an exact methodology on how to build this global machinery and pass it forward to our children and future generations. To join tonight's discussion, please call 929-477-2789. Press the number 1 on your phone when you want to make a comment or ask a question. If you prefer to listen on your computer, go to www.usliftingus.com. Scroll down to the bottom of the homepage. Click on the Dare to Win button, then click on Listen Live. You will then be on the Blog Talk Radio site. If you want to get reminders from Blog Talk Radio for upcoming Dare to Win programs, please click on the Follow button. Ulu members, we have our own social media community. Please join if you have not already done so. There's a Dare to Win group, and we would like to have your feedback on past Dare to Win programs, as well as topic suggestions for future programs. Go to uslifting.us.com. You can reach the Ulu community through the members-only portal. When you register for the Ulu community, please use the same name you use when you join Ulu. The ULU annual members meeting and convention is coming soon. Mark your calendars for March 10th through March 12th. Also join us during our virtual meeting as we reconnect to members of the ULU family, recommit to the ULU Nu'ujima program of economic development for our community, and renew with a collective spirit in the ULU transformation for our present and our future. You can register now by going to usliftingus.com/convention. If you'd like to become a convention sponsor, you can also do that at usliftingus.com/convention. We look forward to seeing you there at the convention. Put the dates on your calendar, Friday, March 10th through Sunday, March 12th. Remember, this event is for ULU members only. I am Sister Q, and joining me for this evening's discussion is Brother Shabaka, who, like me, is a member of ULU. This evening's topic is, do we have a right to be independent and economically self-determined? Peace, Brother Shabaka. How are you doing tonight?
Hey, peace and greetings to you, Sister Q, and the family. And is so happy to be on tonight. I'm very anxious to have us have a discussion about that topic. It's very important. But I'm doing quite well. Thank you for asking.
Thank you for joining us tonight. So the way you have the question, Brother Shabaka, it seems to imply that we may not have a right to independence and self-determination. Do we have that right?
Yes, we do. And we had it before. That's why we have it. We have a right to it. But before I go into the nuts and bolts of why we have that right as a people, let me lay out a couple things. The European attacked Africa. It also attacked the Americas. And the black man and woman were on both continents. Family, did you hear what I said? Can you hear me, sister?
I heard you. Okay.
All right. We were on both continents.
Mm-hmm.
In America, the oldest civilization is the Olmec civilization, which existed at its high point at least 1,500 years before Columbus knew that he was alive. Obviously, that goes back into the BCs, before the Christian era. All right. Obviously, for it to at its high point, it had to have had, you know, some essence of a civilization, community, interaction, nation, before it evolved to its high point. All right. So there were black people here. You look at the Olmec heads, they don't look like the Native Americans that we are used to. All right. They don't look like the Chinese that some of them try to claim is the descendants from that culture. The Polynesians, well, the Polynesians evolved from black people, all right. But we have no reason to fear that the Olmec civilization was not created by a black-skinned people. All we got to do, and a Negroid people. Now, I say the word Negroid for this reason, because, see, you have over there on the African continent, particularly Egypt, you got what they call Egyptologists, all right, Arab Egyptologists, who will admit, even the white boy admits, that, yeah, there was a dark-skinned people that ruled and civilized Egypt, all right? But what they try to do is make like it's a dark-skinned Caucasian. the emphasis is that it was dark, but it was Negroid. In other words, it wasn't West African, because, you know, most of the people that we see here now are of West African ancestry. All right. Even the Olmec and those that came before evolved from the West African end of the continent. The Garifunas who small population in Honduras, Belize, mm-hmm. all right, mm-hmm. they were here before Columbus. They do not even speak Spanish or Portuguese. I mean, they speak it
right.
because that's the language that's spoken now. But they said their mother tongue is Arawak. Now, what the Europeans did was have us believe that the Arawaks were Indians, Native Americans, the language that spoke mm-hmm. was spoken by them who occupied the islands. Well, the Garifunas occupied the islands. And then when this wave of pale-faced people started coming, of course, they waged a war against them. And then there was mm-hmm. a treaty, so they went to the mainland. But they said they were here before Columbus, and they spoke Arawak, all right? Now, they were here before Columbus. The thing is, how long have they been here, all right? It depends on who you ask. Some that I know said they were here mm-hmm. as a consequence of the Malian Empire at the time, all right? Some said they came here before then, okay? All right, mm-hmm. so they're trying to gather their history, too, and the Spanish and Portuguese and British are doing everything in the hell to hide those documents, all right, and make it very – in fact, they're trying to really remove that culture, all right. But so that's two examples of people that's been here before Columbus and had their own society, had their own community, all right, and they weren't practicing capitalism, all right?
Gotcha.
All right, but now – so – we could just use those two examples. There's more examples to use of Africans among us who are examining, you know, particularly try to identify the path in which they found themselves here and what path did they take. But more importantly, mm-hmm. let's get to the crunch of your question that you asked. Why do mm-hmm. we feel that we have a right to be independent, all right, and economically self-determined people. All right, what interrupted mm-hmm. that, and what should be our response as a consequence of that interruption? All right, brothers and sisters, family and friends, hey, look, it's time to pull out the pencil because I don't want you to accept my word. The European puts it in his own language. You just got to find it. Mm-hmm. In 1452. Not 1952, not 1852, in 1452, Pope Nicholas V issued an apostolic edict. They usually call those the papal bull, known as the Duns Diversus. That was the name of that particular papal bull or apostolic edict. You can find it, go on the website, and I'm going to spell it for you. I'm going to spell the Pope's name, too. All right, Nicholas, Nicholas V. The papal bull that he issued, all right, was the Duns Diversus. That's Duns Diversus. A-S. Just go on the website, put it in the search engine, let it come up. All right. He issued that. That document mm-hmm. declared total war against people on the African continent. And it specified. It says it gave, at the time, it was given Portugal, because Portugal was the leaving, was the last country in Iberia to expel the Moors. The Moors had been living there for about 700 years. The Moors were African Berbers and Arabs who were Muslims, had occupied mm-hmm. Spain and Portugal for 700 years. So they had expelled those, all right? And, you know, mm-hmm. they expelled them, but at least they learned some things. They learned how to take a bath, all right? So we did do something for them and showed them how to build structures, too, because they were living in caves, mm-hmm. all right? So it was during that time, all right, I want to also mention during this time because you might say, well, what kind of influence did the Pope have over Portugal, which was a country? I want you to keep in mind that the Holy Roman Empire, I think we all know that going all the way back to at the turn of the Christ coming on earth, you know, the Holy Roman Empire existed, started around, you know, 300 A.D., all right, and broke up into two parts, all right. And keep in mind also you heard of the Crusades, all right. The Crusades were the Holy Roman Empire trying to capitalize and colonize the Middle East, all right. And they were met and fought by Muslims. Well, the Muslims just came across North Africa and then invaded Spain. Okay, so they was driven out, and you know after they learned some things, how to speak, how to dance, how to play instruments, they learned something. You know, they didn't know very much. All right.
Right.
So the year 1452 is within the domain of the Holy Roman Empire in the West. That didn't dissolve until 1806. And so the Pope had a lot of influence in Western Europe as well as Eastern Europe, you know, that was divided in two parts. So when the Pope said something, all right, he gave it to Portugal because Portugal was beginning to explore the seas and had navigated and were beginning to navigate around, you know, Africa. Now, why was the Portugal interested in Africa? Well, before they was interested in the slaves, so-called, all right, they knew about the routes from Central Africa, from West Africa to North Africa to the Middle East, all right, to India and China. So what the Europeans wanted to do was capitalize that route, you know, by ship, you know, because going across the Sahara, you remember now the Sahara is very large. You can put the United States, you can put the continental United States inside of the Sahara, you know, and still have plenty of room. All right. So therefore, you know, to go now during that time, you know, they didn't have American Airlines or anything like that. You had to travel and you had to travel over a hot, humid, well, not humid so much, but a hot area. All right. And it has certain routes. You had to know from the routes, you know, where the oases were, all right, to refuel yourself, and then how long it would take you to get to the next. They had all those routes. They knew all of them. The Africans knew it. The Europeans wanted them. So when Pope Nicholas in 1452, you know, within the year of the Holy Roman Empire, which had captured Eastern and Western Europe, all right, ordered them to attack the African continent by giving them an edict to attack first the Saracens, A-R-A-C-E-N-S. They were Muslims, all right? And then the pagans. Well, we were the pagans. That's the black Africans, okay? So he wasn't leaving out anybody, all right?
Uh-huh.
All right, so to attack us. Now, as attacking us, if you happen to be a victim of that attack, and war was waged on you, then you weren't a slave. You became a prisoner of the war as a consequence of being captured. What the European did was turn that language around and said that, you know, we picked up slaves from Africa. No, they picked up people that they had kidnapped and captured as a consequence of the war that they waged. This papal bull here indicated that they had since 1452 decided to enslave, all right, the victims as the war that was created, all right, in order to get the people. So the papal bull waged war against the Muslims in the north. We knew that because they was fighting the Muslims in the north in the so-called Holy Land during the Crusade, as well as the black Africans, all right, because the gold really was coming from West Africa. They knew about the gold. Somehow that seems to excite Europeans. You know, it excites us now too. All right. So yeah, so that was a war wage. As a consequence of that war wage, we have to rethink how we see ourselves. We should never allow anybody to tell us that we were slaves. We were victimized. We were prisoners of war, kidnapped victims as a consequence of the papal bull issued by this Pope Nicholas, who was part of the Holy Roman Empire that has influence over all of Europe. You follow me, sister?
Yes, I do.
You there?
Yeah. Yes, I'm here, and I'm following.
All right.
I have a question right quick, if I could take you off this. So is the Dunn-Dess, the service, is that still in effect? Has it
Dunn's,
ever?
Yeah,
has
Dunn's. Yeah, go ahead.
Has any pope ever come back and said they were overriding that, or, you know, make it's no longer in effect? Because if they haven't
changed,
not to my
knowledge.
Then, okay, so then the
not,
pope
not to my knowledge.
Have, all right, so the,
have,
then
they,
the pope
they,
has
they,
authorized that to still be going on right now today.
It is. You know, a little subtle, but it is. All right, no, not to my knowledge. In fact, there's some reparation groups that are trying to get the Pope to apologize for their role, you know, in so-called slave trade, all right, because it was not – that was the one that issued in, but all during the whole period, you know, when Spain and Portugal was fighting, the Pope says, okay, well, look, Spain, you go over to the Americas. And you remember now, and I said there were black people in America, all right, and Native Americans, all right, all right. So he says, well, look, I'm going to divide up the territory between you two. Spain, you go over to the Americas, and Portugal, you take care of the African continent, which is why you have Guinea-Bissau, Cape Verde, colonies that were controlled by Portugal, Angola, all right, and Mozambique, which were the islands, you know, until the British and the English got in there and said, no, I got to get some of this action too. All right, so they got into it. All right, but it was set by that particular pope and that edict that came out during that particular time, well before, supposedly well before we were brought here. Keep in mind now that we was on both sides of the Atlantic, all right?
Uh-huh.
A lot is known about being on the eastern side of the Atlantic, which is Africa. Very little is known about our participation here. And reparationists, you know, reparationists, have to begin to address, you know, they have to do their research to address, how do they address in applying for reparations for Africans who was here. Then obviously when the Europeans came here and engaged in war here, all right, whom they captured, they enslaved as well. So they enslaved the Africans and some Native Americans at the time before they found out that they couldn't survive from the sickness and the harsh, you know, Native Americans at the time was not engaged in agriculture as Africans were. All right, and of course, we know about the attack on Africa itself and bringing a large group of folks here and enslaved them in the U.S. So it's two, and all right, so war was waged basically on two fronts, if you want, the Americas and Africa. It wages on the Americas, all right, because, again, you know, somebody told the Europeans that in addition to the gold, there was other spices and jewels, you know, and you can reach India, supposedly, all right. And so they figured that where the black man was, since we were already carrying out trade with India across over land, all right, they figured that they would have another route to circumvent. See, the Europeans always wanted to use the technology and their skill, all right, to begin to dominate, all right, and monopolize the trade. For some reason, they're not happy just sharing. They're a little greedy.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so I'll give that to them. You know, I don't like to use the term God made them that way, but they're that way. You know, I didn't make them.
Yeah.
They're that way. And they seem to be okay that way. All right, so there was war waged on us, all right, going back to 1452, distinctively assigned to attack Africans and brown people, Muslim people in the north, specifically, all right, to hold them in servitude, all right. So it was an act of war against the continent of Africa where these people lived, all right. And, of course, the victims, all right, would be transported. I don't want to use the term New World, but, you know, to what we call now the Americas. And then it was there where, and the first thing they did, it wasn't farming that they started doing. When they brought Africans, all right, and captured Africans and Native American there, they was looking for gold. They was building mines. You know, they weren't about no food. You know, white boy wanted gold.
Right.
That's what he's in, that's what he loves. He loves that trinkling. All right. So he wanted to do that. All right. And then eventually the agriculture came in, and we'll know about that. I'm going to talk a little bit about that there. But the important thing to know is that we shared. In fact, we have been on every continent, black people, all right, Negroes or what, all right, we have been on every continent, all right, and we considered ourselves Africans. Well, we considered ourselves, we became African rather recently, but we were whatever the tribe that we were with, that's what we were. But we evolved from the African continent. Even those that came over here, early on in their sojourn, you know, they came from Africa. Everybody came from Africa because we've seen the past, and we have the oldest fossils coming out of Africa, you know. All right, until we see something different, you know, we assume this is the continent, that's where we came from, but we settled many lands. Now.
Brother Chewbacca, before you go to your next point, we have a hand up, so... We take this comment or address this question that's coming in here.
Yeah, let's bring the questions in.
Okay. Caller with the last four digits, 3429, please state your name, where you're calling from, and make your comment or ask your question. Thank you.
So I just wanted to make a comment.
Say your name again, please.
Listen, Stubbs.
Stubbs, okay, thank you.
Can you hear me? Okay. Yes.
Go ahead, Brother Stubbs.
Yeah, I just wanted to, I was just listening to the elder, you know, share his knowledge of, you know, of course, the sounds like it was somewhat the origins of the slave trade and all of that. However, I just want to make, only what I want to kind of push back against is this whole language and whole concept of a kidnapping. We have to come to terms and accept the fact that this was a trade. This was a willing partner and a willing seller that was engaged in the enterprise of slavery. And, of course, in some of those, you know, the Edo, we know who some of those tribes were and, of course, that participated. None of what he said about the capable and all of that was wrong. But, however, the slave trade and the slave history of slave enterprise is a lot more complicated than that, because of course the Catholic Church, the paper, they had no right to impose anything on a sovereign people, but they didn't respect those people as sovereign. And of course in the African tribes, they did fight back, they did try to prevent what was the beginning of the slave trade, but unfortunately, you know, some Africans like Mansa Musa had introduced Europeans to the slave trade, because as he was selling his gold, he was gleefully mandating that they purchase one of his slaves before he did business with them. And we have to accept that fact. We have to come to terms that with some of our Africans that participated in that slave trade. Matter of fact, England had to implement a blockade to stop them from selling after they got into it. They didn't get into it voluntarily, true enough. They fought against it. But once they got into it and they started to sell tribes other than their own, and eventually their own got sold too. So we just, and of course, and that's what most people realize today. We've done the research. We know who the tribes are. And we know that we're probably those who descended from slaves here in America. We call, you know, black Americans, freedmen. We understand that, you know, we may be a part of those tribes that no longer exist. But I just simply, you know, want just to make sure that when we're telling the slave story, that we're not absolving Africans, that they were partners. It was a business. It was a trade, a willing buyer and a willing seller. It's what it ended up being. And they didn't even really voluntarily stop. They had to be made to stop by the people that they were doing business with. And that's an uncomfortable and an ugly truth that we have to embrace. And, of course, and I'm done, and I'll continue to listen.
All right. Well, I appreciate that comment. But remember, brother, this is my interpretation of the information I have. And I did indicate it that in the Holy Roman Empire, the Pope, all right, licensed Portugal to attack Africa. So that they initiated an attack on black people and brown people, if you want to consider the Arabs brown. All right. And I'm not saying now, the other thing is that I said that there were different tribes and different tribes. Now, if you take a look at Africa, and you know the invasion came from the northeast. That's where the Arabs came in and across, all right, the water, the Red Sea. All right. If you look at that, all right, you know that in any tribal situation with war, there's always a contingency. We usually sometimes refer to them as refugees, all right, that leave the era of contention and move. They, in turn, will come in contact with other people, and that will create, all right, again, a struggle for control over resources. So I'm not denying that, but the Pope said to go and attack Africans, tribes, didn't say let's go and attack Europe, except the Moors. And the only reason the Moors attacked Spain was a consequence of the holy wars that was going on, you know, so-called holy wars that was going on in the Middle East and North Africa over in the East. So they just went there and they said, we'll go across. And they knew the geography of the area because they lived in that area. They got that information from the Phoenicians over 1,000 years earlier. So they knew everything. All right, so I'm not trying to make it look. I'm just telling you from my interpretation of the information, the Pope sent the Portuguese, the Spain, and later on the English, the Dutch, and everybody else to attack Africa. And the beneficiary of that, we can look at that, is that Africa is extremely poor, wealthy, resources, but the people have been divided on both sides. Remember now, and I said it was African people who are, we would consider Africans also over here in the West. All right, and so the war was waged on two fronts, Africa and the Americas. All right, Africans in the Americas were captured and were enslaved. Africans on the continent were captured and enslaved. All right, but they were victims because the war was waged in 1452. All right, now let me. That was while I'm trying to give an idea of the status, how we may look at how do we address the question of reparations if, in fact, instead of allowing ourselves to be called slaves, and if there is an attack on us and we were grabbed, regardless of who helped in that grabbing, all right, then we may be pushed prisoner of war. And then what international law allow us to address redress if we're prisoners of war as opposed to being just slaves? That's the question I'm raising. So I'm saying that's the question of reparationists who are running their cases to the Supreme Court, who want to go out here to the UN or what have you. They need to address that question. Now let me get to the other part of that too. Let's bring it up about another four centuries. In January of 1865.
Okay.
That's not too long ago. That's not too long ago.
Right.
The United States Secretary of War, his name was Edwin McMaster Stanton. McMaster can be spelled McMasters Stanton. Okay? And everybody knows General William T. Sherman. They met in Savannah. In 1865, January of 1865, with a group of 20 black people representing various class of what was then free men, as the brother said earlier, mm-hmm. free men. Now, mm-hmm. in response to General Sherman's fourth request to state in what manner, this is what he stated, it's written down,
mm-hmm.
in what manner would you rather live, whether scattered among the whites or in colonies by yourselves, all right? The spokesperson for the group, his name was Garrison Fraser, answered, I would prefer to live by ourselves, he was talking about us, by ourselves.
Yeah.
All
uh-huh.
of the other persons present being questioned, he questioned each one of the 20, all right? And nobody disagreed uh-huh. with him. I think maybe one. And then he initiated special field order number 15, okay? Now, that had also, he couldn't issue that unless it was also approved by Lincoln at the time, who was the president, all right? Special Field Order number 15, which gave a plot of land, all right, on the east coast of Mississippi, Georgia, and Northern California, 40 acres. That's where that 40 acres, that's where the 40 acres came from. The mule came from the Freedmen's Bureau, all right? It was the Freedmen's Bureau that, all right, donated the mule, because in order to get that land, to farm that land, you need a worked animal. So that's why it was called 40 acres and a mule, okay? So that was in 1865, January, when he met with these 20 Africans, all right, of various classes, and then asked them what they want, all right? And all but one, and I think it was, some say it was all of them, wanted, when they say a colony, you got to look at that term colony. It meant an autonomous area inside continental United States, as it was at that time. All right, the strip. Now, a year or two earlier, the Emancipation Proclamation came out in 1863. All right, when another general had gotten to Mississippi, he also made a similar claim, offer, all right, to give people in Mississippi, and now so German made it in Mississippi the same setup. In fact, it was probably more in Mississippi than it was in South Carolina and Georgia. All right. Now, so what was happening at the time? Prior to the Civil War, I want everybody to listen to this. Prior to the Civil War, cotton was king. Okay, we had other cash crops that we were forced to produce. But, all right, cotton was king, though, all right? And so prior to the Civil War, cotton was the number one export of the United States. In fact, 60%, over 60% of U.S. export at that time was cotton, all right, to the tune of 80% of the imports in Europe was cotton. So when they had the war, that devastated the cotton industry. You know how they talk about the 1920s when they had the Great Depression, people was jumping out the windows. Well, they had some people jumping out some windows when cotton fell down too, right prior to the Civil War, prior to the Civil War. So yeah, because that was, people was making money. It spurred also the Industrial Revolution. You know, England was first. Okay. England got the Industrial Revolution because you remember now, America was a colony to England, all right? All right, so it was getting through taxation along with the enslavement. It was making money through slavery and taxation on the colonists. All right, so it was pumping money into the industry to create machines. All right, the same thing happened to in the United States. All right, in fact, the North really went to war against the South because it wanted to control the cotton industry, all right? I mean, the South maintained its autonomy by shipping its stuff to the North and to Europe. The North wanted it to go strictly through the North and then to Europe, all right? So they fought about that, and one of the easiest ways to fight that war, they felt, was to free the slaves in 1863 in territories that they didn't control at the time, but that would have created an uprising. That's all they wanted to do. All right, and so that was our contribution. It was a trick by white person. But now remember now, we had the war on us, and then after the war, I mean the war on us, African people, all right, then after the war, all right, we were subjugated to the land, all right, and from our subjugation to the land after the war, they granted us semi-autonomous structures and areas to govern, all right, and then Lincoln got assassinated.
Okay.
That was also, he got assassinated in April 1865. I say that ushered in a coup, all right, particularly among people in his own party, the Republican Party at that time. That was supposed to be the Liberal Party at that time. All right, people in his party, all right, who sympathized with the South and who had relationships with the South and collaborated with the South, okay, all right. And then they didn't want to see, excuse me, they didn't necessarily want to see, they wanted control, but they didn't want the control of giving a whole bunch of land. I mean, look, that's a large area of land going from South Carolina down to northern Florida, and over there in the Mississippi, right. You had also another settlement. That was a lot of land, and Africans knew how to farm that land. So as a consequence of all that, all right, they reneged on that. They took everything back, drew reparations. They gave back the planters. They gave it back to the planters. All right. The planters wanted to try to make up ground because they were king. All right. So they needed Africans to stay in the South. All right. So they had sharecropping that came up. And then after sharecropping, if you didn't want to do any sharecropping, they had convict leasing programs where you could be grabbed off the street. And remember now, the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendment were also issued during this period of time, too. 13th Amendment was freed, so-called freed slaves. All right, the 14th Amendment, all right, which, one was the free the slaves, the next one, wait a minute, I got, the 14th Amendment gave them citizenship, all right, but it gave them citizenship, ain't give them any money. It gave them citizenship so they could vote. All right, there was no voting that the Southern planters was going to allow, but they did need that labor, and which is why they set up the convict leasing program as well as sharecropping. All right, and then a 15th Amendment was ratified, which gave them the right to vote. Well, except for the South, there were no voting. The North didn't care if they voted because the only people they was going to vote for in the majority white population in the North were white people, okay? They wanted the cheap labor. So as a consequence of giving the land back to the planters and the planters, all right, raising with their dummies, that's the Ku Klux Klan, intimidating and sustaining and keeping control over the South, all right, and then robbing the sharecroppers, all right, would maintain in the South and try to increase their production of cotton. All right, those that were able to flee, I call them refugees because they was fleeing. They fled to the North and they fled West. They fled up to Washington, Philly, New York, or they fled over to Chicago, Detroit, or they fled over, you know, to Kansas City, Oklahoma, all right, Indian Territory, all the way over to the West Coast of the U.S., all right? They fled, all right? And then where were they? They were set up in ghettos. I call them refugees camp because, again, I'm using the fact that we were in prison as a consequence of our being attacked while our ancestors were on the African continent. And so, and we had no rights, all right? All right, and then we had no rights even when we went to these centers in the North and the West. All right, we had no rights. We stayed in ghettos, and we were there as a source of cheap labor for the European entrepreneurship, all right, and then, of course, sharecropper labor, all right, in the South. So the rights were taken away from us, and that's what that Claude Anderson always speak about, is that we were a privileged people. We had a right to these things, and the Europeans didn't give them to us. That's why he's going to court now, because they said they didn't honor the agreements and the commitments that they made. Well, we could have told them that. All you got to do is look at the Native American, at least most of them, all right, of honoring that. So, sister, when you look at the, those things, you can see that the predicament that we were placed in allowed for first the imprisonment as a consequence of being captured, then enslaved as a consequence of the need of the European, all right, in slave production. The European over here, all right, who rebelled against England and Spain, all right, wanted to use the cash crop that they derived from free labor, all right, to sell to the European market, all right. And you notice that in 1804, Haiti had a successful revolution against the French, but they couldn't do anything. Because, number one, all of the white, you remember now, Africa was also being invaded as a result, you know, for colonization, all right? So they couldn't sell to the African colonies because the African colonies that were being set up, all right, the foundation which was being set up, all right, had not had that kind of economy. So the only thing that the Haitians could do was sell the crops that they had to Europe. Europe said they wouldn't accept them. They weren't going to accept any crops from any black nation. Okay, so that's why Haiti is in, was one of the conditions that forced Haiti to be in the predicament that it's currently in now. So let me stop here to see if there was any more questions that the people might have before going on. I know I've been talking a lot. I don't really want to. I want to make sure this is a conversation. People have, you know, some questions, and I can give my my perspective on why I think we are where we are right now.
Okay. Brother Shabaka, we do not have any hands up on the board, but I would like to kind of make sure we have an understanding of what all of what you said before. So, because that's a whole lot of information, and some of it is new to some of us. But if I understand correctly, Pope Nicholas V had an apostolic edict known as the Dum Diversus in 1452. In 1452, that gave Portugal part of the, which Portugal was part of the Holy Roman Empire at the time, right? And
that's correct.
Probably some other European countries. He gave them permission to attack Africa and to dispense any captives into servitude. So he basically set up the slave, the idea of making the people prisoners of war, but he called them slaves. He made them slaves, right? So captives became
his idea was to enslave them. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So they were in fact they were prisoners of war, but they called them slaves rather than acknowledge what actually happened. And then again, at the end of the Civil War, there were agreements between General Sherman and others to give descendants of the African prisoners of war, because this is all the result of the Papal Bull. They gave them the right to land and some degree of self-governance. So is that correct so far?
That is absolutely correct, sister.
Okay, all right.
In my interpretation.
Yes, okay, all right. So now, if you will be so kind as to carry us forward. Oh, we got another hand up. Would you like to do that before you...
Yes, please.
Finish that up, okay. Okay, caller with the last four digits, 7204. Please state your name, where you're calling from, make your comment, or ask your question. Thank you.
Yes, good evening. How are y'all doing this evening? This is Deborah from Richmond, Virginia. How y'all doing?
Greetings, Sister Deborah.
Doing fine. I just wanted to ask, I think it's two questions real quick. The Africans that was in included in the slave trade that sold us, do you think they knew that we were going to be treated so badly? And if they did know, where else did they, what other country hanged us, cut our legs off and all that stuff that happened to us and raped us and all? I haven't found another place that we were treated that badly. As far as I was reading that, what they were doing was the white people needed help because they didn't know how to farm. They didn't know how to do anything over here. And they was basically were supposed to be over here just to help them get straight. So I just wanted to know, did they know we were going to be treated that badly? And y'all have
No, all they knew. Yeah, you said you had a second question, Sister Deborah?
That was it. That was did we
that
know
was it?
That was treated so badly, and where else in the whole world were we treated like that?
No, well, we had to be treated like that. we had to be treated like that in order, because we were taken away from our homeland and we were brought here. And for those who were here, all right, they were repatriated some other places on in the Americas. So they had to intimidate them. And, you know, in the slave system, the people who were the planters, all right? So therefore, the brutality had to intimidate us from trying to overthrow them, but we know there was a lot of slave revolts. There's always been slavery, so-called slavery. It was different over on the African continent and Europe, primarily because of the conflict that happened. They didn't have a prison system. You know, they didn't put you in jail. That didn't exist, okay? All right, so how did they make amends? They usually integrated you. You were captured, all right, and usually the economies, you know, the economy, the people had their own economy set up. So what their enslavement was to do something with the captives that they had. They didn't kill everybody, all right, so it was to do something with the captives they had. They didn't need them for agriculture because their own people were engaged in agriculture. So they had them doing, you know, other things because they had no prison system. All right. So, but the Europeans say, well, we'll take them. Okay. So they had no idea of what the Europeans had planned. A few may have, because some of them went on the voyage. Some of the people who collaborated did go on the voyage and learn. All right. And that's why there was some resistance when they got back. All right. In other words, they told them what was the experience, and that they noticed that, you know, it was all white people who were doing all this to black people. All right. So they begin to see the color differentiation and the treatment. So, no, the average African who was engaged, you know, in the war, in other words, the war that was perpetuated, you know, had no idea what was happening until they had to see it themselves. And like I said, very few see it because some of them went on the voyage with the Europeans after they had captured. So they had no idea because the slave system that they practiced there, all right, was different. You wasn't doomed to slavery for the rest of your life and the rest of your offspring life. So no, it was different. But it was, you know, it did deprive you of your freedom and what you were doing when you were whole as a member of a particular ethnic community. It did deprive you of that. All right. But it didn't do the atrocities because, like I said, the atrocities that was relegated on us was a consequence of creating fear so that we wouldn't rebel because we had, in some cases, outnumbered the Europeans. So they had to, it's the same thing that they had in the colonial situation. The colonies had administrative colonies, except for in South Africa, maybe some parts of Namibia and Kenya. They had large settlements of whites. They didn't outnumber the blacks, but they had large settlements of whites. Other than that, you had administrative colonization, which you had a contingency of a governor, you know, a contingency of soldiers and what have you. They being outnumbered, they were very brutal, all right, to prevent and intimidate any uprising against them. Well, it's almost a similar fashion that we had here in the States, because the Africans in the South outnumbered the planters, all right, who were their masters. If that answers your question.
I've closed her mic.
Okay. Go ahead,
let me see if we have any other hands. No more hands up. So going back to what you were saying, Brother Shibaki, you were saying as prisoners of war here, as prisoners of war, you do have rights, right? But then with the making of the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendments, which changed these from prisoners of war and folded them into the United States as citizens and gave them the right to vote and da-da-da, did that nullify the rights that we had based on our condition as prisoners of war, based on our classification as prisoners of war.
In my opinion, it did. The 13th Amendment that freed us from servitude, so we were no longer. All right, the 14th Amendment made us citizens, so we couldn't claim sovereignty because we was already we were a citizen of a sovereign country. All right, and then the 15th Amendment, all right, gave us the right to vote. You know, making it appear that we had the right to participate in the political process. All right, so those three amendments, you know, nullified, all right, our ability, you know, nullified. Now, remember now, they didn't ask us. The only time that they indicated any kind of a plebiscite to ask us what we wanted, was Sherman, you know, in January of 1865. You know, mm-hmm. after that, and then that was reneged, all right, mm-hmm. that was reneged, particularly after Lincoln was assassinated, all right? So that uh-huh. was reneged, so we got no land, we got nothing, all right? But we were made free, no money, all right, given the right to become a citizen so I could sit with the white boy, all right, still no money, all right? And uh-huh. then the right to vote, still no money, okay? Uh-huh. All right, and so therefore, that nullified all that. And I'm saying that the reparations movement need to address the question of land, because as black people here before Christopher Columbus came and who were mm-hmm. captured and then eventually enslaved, as black people on the African continent, all right, who had enjoyed freedom and servitude and self-determination, all right, brought here mm-hmm. and then captured, and then the promise, all right, of some autonomy after we were released from slavery, and then that was nullified with the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendment, I'm saying we have a case. And then with the advent of the UN and the UN with all its declarations going back to the Durban in 2001 and all these rights of nations, you know, we need to go back. And then with the creation of the International Court of Justice, the World Court, mm-hmm. I said we have some ammunition, because there was some illegal operation that took place which still kept us in servitude. And so voting was still poor. So we had gotten nothing. The UN was a function. Now, we know that the UN is captured by the Americas and Western Europe, all right? But it's a vehicle. All right, because the same thing that is happening, or similar thing that is happening to us, black people, all right, is happening to the blacks in the Caribbean, the blacks in Central and South America, it's happening on the continent. All right, in other words, they're being deprived. You know, they may have a puppet. They may have a puppet mm-hmm. as a head of state, but they do not enjoy economic self-determination as a consequence of the banking system and the industry, how it's set up to make sure that their economies are captured by the same Europeans that enslaved his brothers and sisters and that colonized their brothers and sisters. All right, so the same thing. All we need to do is show that it's one thing. So it provides us an avenue, all right, if we want to work that political sphere. The other sphere mm-hmm. is it gives us an opportunity. You know, because, you know, in case of Ulu, our objective is also to engage in economic activity with brothers and sisters inside the United States, outside the United States, because we figure with that economic might, it will also strengthen up if we wish to use the political stick, all right, with that economic might. So our program that Ulu has, I think, is one of the best. It gives us an opportunity. All right, to do that. Other people are into the reparation thing. That's good for them. But they have to really look and examine, all right, and research, you know, what are they trying to repair? All right, what are they trying to get compensated and why? All right.
Uh-huh.
And you know, the European is there to tell you what you need. But can you trust them?
Exactly.
Can you trust them?
Right. These are the same people, and actually these are the same people that did the paper ball and the 13th,
that's right.
14th and 15th Amendment. So, you know, by now we might want to have think we've figured it out.
Right. And, you know, having said that, since I know we're running out of time, it was always a war even before then. As I said, the Europeans were sending over crusades. You know,
mm-hmm.
after the Islamic War gave, you know, because the Christians
right.
had control over that. They had control over that whole
mm-hmm.
area. And they wouldn't have that control
right.
over the area, not because, you know, they want to give praises to Jesus Christ and everything. It was riches over there in the East.
They
it was riches
in
the
Jesus
East.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sorry, brothers and sisters who are Christians, but I got to tell like it is. They wanted that trade. They wanted control of that trade.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the Muslims were there, and Muhammad, what have you, you know, who was fighting them. And so it always
mm-hmm.
been a war. And so the Pope says, well, look, we got to end this. Just go down there and attack Africa because that's where I'm getting all of the trouble from. Thank you.
So the
Thank
answer
you,
to our
yes.
question, Brother Shabaka, we do have the right to be independent and self-determined. Yes.
As prisoners of war, all right, we have a right through the UN Charter, all right,
okay.
Treaties and agreement that was denied us by the U.S. government, we have a right,
mm-hmm.
all right?
Okay.
And the question is land, all right, which they promised and didn't deliver on, okay?
Okay.
And it's down in the history books. I'm not saying this. It's down there. Sherman said it. He wrote it. He got his
mm-hmm.
permission from Lincoln. Lincoln just got blown away, you know?
Right, right. Okay. Thank you, Brother Shabaka. That was very enlightening to me. A lot of stuff I had not heard of, and some of the stuff I heard of, I hadn't thought of it in exactly the way you brought it forward. So I personally thank you for that. We want to thank everyone who joined us this evening. We want to invite you to join us again next Thursday evening at 9 o'clock Eastern Time for another installment of Dare to Win. And please remember, if you have not joined ULU or you have joined ULU and you have not registered for the meeting coming up in March 10th through 12th, please do so as soon as possible. Thank you. Peace, Brother Shabaka.
Thank you, and peace to you, sister and family.